Yoda's doing parkour and Hayden Christensen hates sand. Thank God Christopher Lee is here. George Lucas heard your complaints and doesn't care. It's Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones, and it was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, hello. I'm Sean Collier. This is Number One Movie in America. I'm here with two people who don't even really know why they're on this Texas road trip. It's Robin Hitchcock.
Ring a ding 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 ding.
And Camila Adams.
I want to turn around.
A couple of people on our socials and then said, like, I don't hate that Texas Chainsaw. And then I saw, you know, every year there's the articles that are like, here's a few extra horror sequels and things that you should give a try to. They're not that bad. And I saw this pop up a few places.
Really?
And I'm like, no.
That doesn't make sense to me. I feel like they must have been confusing it with the 2003 one. That's the only explanation.
It was in a targeted Peacock email. Like, I got an email from Peacock that's like, here's some horror hits. And this one was in there. I'm like, man,
why are you embarrassed this is on your streaming service? You shouldn't be advertising it.
Right. I mean, this is the only one you guys could afford to get rights to. Is that what it was?
I still do not understand why Peacock is not just every movie Universal ever released. Like, why isn't it that and we're done?
Yeah, I have no idea. It doesn't make sense to me.
I think part of the answer is co-productions. Bah. Like, Universal co-bankrolls a lot of movies because they've had lean periods.
But, like, with, first of all, the Universal Monsters movies, which are definitely theirs, they'll, like, drop 15 of them in September and then pull them off again in December and they won't be back until the next
episode.
Oh, wow.
It's like, what?
Anyway. Yeah, they should definitely have the old classics.
Well, Texas Chainsaw or Texas Chainsaw 3D, whatever it was, 22 points was our score. 96th place overall on our list. That is 5 from the bottom. Wow. Just below Divergent, going way back. It outranked Halloween, Rob Zombie's Halloween, Friday the 13th, A New Beginning, Transformers, and that other Transformers. Those are our bottom five, but Texas Chainsaw does make the bottom five. And what a record-setting day. It set the lowest individual score in the history of the podcast with Robin's 0 out of 100 from Robin Hitchcock.
And I stand by it.
It's a letter day.
The previous record was the 3 that Camila gave Friday the 13th, A New Blood. I've never gotten lower than 5. For one of them Transformers. We won't get that low, I bet, but, you know, that's about where the good news probably ends.
Flirting with it.
Yeah, Attack of the Clones, everybody. Let's talk about the prequels. Camila, what was your relationship to the Star Wars prequels before today?
When you say prequels, you mean this one and then the first one and then the third one? Or
Episodes
1 through 3.
I have not seen any of them. I was actively avoiding them. I just didn't, it didn't interest me at all. Like, I'm barely interested in the Star Wars universe. I think I was in college when they came out because I remember the boys around me going kind of being real into it and stuff. But yeah, I just have no interest in it whatsoever. And it continues.
Robin, you and the prequels?
I think I like them a little bit more than most people. I saw Phantom Menace a little bit after it came out because I didn't go opening weekend and then everybody was like, it's bad. So seeing it with those expectations, I was like, there were good parts. Like, I really liked the last 20 minutes. And I remember really liking this one. Huh. I did not feel the same way rewatching it now. And I haven't seen episode 3 since when I saw it in the theater, however, 15-ish years ago. So I don't know what to tell you about that one. But basically, I'm certainly not one of those weirdos who apparently exist on the internet where they're like, the prequels are good, actually. I've never understood that phenomenon.
No offense to those weirdos out there who might be listening.
Some
of this, I will both, you know, respect them and condescend to them. That is a nice example of, if you want to like something enough, you'll find a reason. If you are so determined to love something, you know, movies contain multitudes. You can find a path to enjoying just about anything. That doesn't mean it's good. That means you are okay with it and good for you having a nice time, you know?
So I think you just described my feelings about the prequels, or at least episode 1 and 2, where I'm like, there are parts of this I enjoy. Okay. You know, and like the other thing I will say is that I hated Rise of Skywalker so deeply and truly that like it makes this movie, and also Solo, like those movies were like actively bad. So these misguided mixed bag movies, I feel a lot more charitable towards.
I think personally for me, it's there's too much information for me to retain with all of them involved. And it's just like, I just can't do it. I can't muster up the interest.
I dislike this a lot more than any modern Star Wars movie. Like, I think, what's the last one? Skywalker?
Rise of Skywalker.
Rise of Skywalker. I think that's the worst of the new trilogy. And I certainly have no desire to go back to it. And Solo, you know, we've discussed at length, but like these movies are Kogo's hot dogs. And Solo is like a good bar hot dog. And Rise of Skywalker is a perfectly respectable sandwich.
What was the one that came back, like that started all of this new, like the first one with Boyega in it? Which one was that?
The Force Awakens.
Okay. That is the only one that I, outside of my childhood existence of what to me will be the original three, is the only one that I can full on say, yes, I enjoyed that movie, that Star Wars movie.
Yeah, I love Last Jedi, but to me, I'm like, Last Jedi is a good movie. Whereas Force Awakens, it was like, I feel the magic of Star Wars for the first time since I was a child.
I remember seeing Phantom Menace. And then after that, I was like, well, learned my lesson, and I didn't watch the other two, and never did. This was me watching Attack of the Clones for the first time.
Oh, wow.
And I liked Star Wars stuff a lot when I was a kid, but before these came out. Like, there was a Star Wars resurgence in the mid-90s where there was a new VHS set every year, and there were a lot of video games, and there were a lot of books, and I was in on that.
Weren't they re-releasing them in theaters, too?
That was huge.
Yes, and they all came out in movie theaters again. But, like, I remember, because I was 14 when Phantom Menace came out, and so it was like, this is supposed to be good, but I don't think I'm having a good time. Yeah. And, like, that left enough of a bad taste that I just never visited it again. I did, in fact, watch Phantom Menace this weekend before watching Attack of the Clones. I don't know if this is the common opinion or not. Attack of the Clones is bad. Phantom Menace is unwatchably bad. This, like, Attack of the Clones has long stretches of dumb fun. Phantom Menace has 12 good minutes, maybe, and the rest of it is like, oh, man, is this irritating.
Wow.
I hated Phantom. Well, I mean, it's Star Wars. That's the weird thing. That's why this is so infuriating, even 25 years later. Star Wars movies begin on second base, because at the beginning, it says, in a long time, I can't even say the thing because I'm already worked up, long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, and then it says Star Wars, and it goes, bam, and everyone's feeling great. You're starting off so ahead, and you've got aliens and lightsabers and all of the good stuff. It is so easy. You have to work so hard to make that bad, and they did.
Yeah, I just... I'm honest, there is something scientific about how much I actively hate or just block out all of these Star Wars movies. Like, literally, like, I just cannot, there's no connection whatsoever. I watch them and I just cannot get into it. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's all of, like, the made up ridiculous names and places and creatures, and it's just too much. I don't know what it is, but I know there's a psychological study that's there to be had.
It is interesting because, like, you are a, like, geeky person with geeky tastes.
Right.
And then there's, like, this sliver of sci-fi
that's
that
just,
you're
like,
no thanks.
Right. And, like, and I was there, like, for, like, the original stuff, for, you know, for Han Solo and Luke Skywalker and Billy Dee Williams. And I was...
Did you see Jedi in the theater when you were a kid?
I doubt it. I don't think my mom would have taken us to see that. But I remember it being on the TV somehow. I don't know if that was, I don't recall.
Oh, yeah.
What, yeah, I don't, mm-hmm. I don't, yeah, at some point, but I remember that's how I saw it on TV. And I also remember, even probably before I actually saw the movies, I was playing Empire Strikes Back or something with like the neighbor kids. Like, you know, they had the toys, and or we would be like Yoda and all that shit. And it's just letting, you know, me not still fully understanding what was going on. Like, we were still playing it. But there's just, yeah, there is just this something. It's just immediately like my fate, my whole everything just shuts down when they come on.
I don't know. It's we're getting philosophical before any of the segments, but here's my most controversial opinion. This is not like a good thing to do a fandom on the Star Wars universe. hard argument to sell, but look, far be it for me to criticize fandoms. Until J.K. Rowling turned heel on the world, I was buying a new Hufflepuff sweater once a year. But I get it. I get getting really into something, even if that thing is flawed. Harry Potter was always flawed. Everything. I love wrestling. Right. Few things are more flawed. Right. I get it. However, I know there's a billion books and, you know, there's all these little things. Great. With the core Star Wars stuff, only about half of them are good. Mm-hmm. And only a few of them are really good. Mm-hmm. And they're really spaced out. And even a lot of the people who are really into it irrationally hate some parts of it. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, these are a hodgepodge of Kurosawa and Westerns.
Yeah.
Without a lot of like real original things to say or ideas or contributions to storytelling. And the guy making them is kind of a dope. So like there's not that much. It looks really cool. Hey, go to Disney World, ride the rides, buy a lightsaber. That's all great. But if you're thinking about Star Wars stuff every day, I don't know how rewarding that life is going to be for you.
I would argue that people connected to the characters in the original trilogy, Leia and Han and Luke, those are characters who it is easy to either map yourself onto or to have a crush on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, and then the movie's fun and it kind of, especially the first one, is just like, here is basic satisfying story structure.
Right.
You know, so it makes sense to me that people love these movies so much. A lot of this stuff does not really hold up to scrutiny, and it is entirely possible that the expanded universe books make it all make sense. But I think that the big problem with the prequels is that they're really focused on like politics.
Oh my God.
And
the politics of the Star Wars universe are depressing as fuck. And like, especially now, like one thing, like, I remember when I saw, I've probably said this on the podcast before, when I saw Force Awakens, as much as I loved it, I was like, this does not make any sense. How would they let fascism happen again within a generation? And now here we are. And
right.
And then the, like, watching this, you know, here's what happens in the Galactic Senate when people are unhappy because of a lack of resources and somebody's manipulating their emotions. I'm like, yeah, I know. And like, I guess that the truth is that watching a declining empire slide into fascism is in fact boring and stupid, as we know from real life. And so this is art imitating life.
Well, now that we've entered the pool by tunneling into the deep end from the bottom, let's tell you what Attack of the Clones is about, if sensibly you have never or 19 years ago watched this movie. This week's recap from the person
ironically
certainly least interested in remembering what happened in this movie is Camila Adams. Ready and go.
10 years after the Battle of Naboo, the Galactic Republic is threatened by separatist movement, and Padme comes to town, and she's almost killed by some assassins. Obi-Wan and Anakin sign up to protect her. Obi has to go find the other dude that tried to kill her, and it leaves Anakin to watch Padme. So those two fall in love, and then Obi-Wan goes to like a world that's under the sea and finds the clones, and Anakin does a lot of whining because I think his mom dies, and I'm pretty sure he swears not to let anyone else he loves die, but that will get dark side territory. Sam Jackson does not say motherfucker like at all. A bunch of stuff goes down with a bunch of characters whose names I can't keep straight and I don't have the brain power to remember or unpack. And Anakin and Padme get married.
Great.
Yeah.
You really, you covered everything. Wait, did you talk about Jango Fett? I don't know.
No.
Okay.
Every time I heard Jango, I was like, there's a Jamie Foxx joke in here somewhere, but I don't.
Jango is shoehorned in as one of the people involved in the hit, the attempted assassination on Natalie Portman.
Django's the one correct. That looked like Boba Fett, right?
Yeah, so here's the thing. Every little boy, for some reason, was obsessed with Boba Fett, this character that is... he had a jetpack? Is that what it is? Is that why people love him? Regardless,
jetpack and a cool helmet.
Okay, so like, attempting to follow the rule of cool, George Lucas made every stormtrooper a clone of Boba Fett, right? Who is himself a clone of Jango Fett.
Yeah.
That's dumb.
Sure. Yep.
That little boy was Boba Fett. And he watches Samuel L. Jackson cut off his dad's head in front of him, which would be poignant if we didn't just know that Boba Fett was kind of going to die futilely three movies from now. Like, if that was building to a big revenge, I don't know. Does he kill Samuel L. Jackson in Revenge of the Sith?
No. Samuel L. Jackson, I think, is killed by Anakin in Revenge of the Sith, although I recently saw some tweet that he's going to be on one of the Disney Plus shows, so I guess it's a Darth Maul. Sometimes you get cut in half in this universe, and it doesn't count.
That's what I'm saying. It's too much. It's just too much happening.
And I will say, at the beginning of this movie, the flying car chase to me, like you said, like there's a lot of parts of this movie. It's like dumb fun. Like, I'm into the flying car chase.
Mm-hmm. Is that where what's his butt falls out or jumps out and he's all like, oh, I hate it when he does that.
Yeah, there's a lot of like really cheesy bad banter and I'm like, okay.
You gotta find the gold where you can, man. Find happiness where you can.
And I think that Zam Wessel, who is the bounty hunter after them in that chase, I'm like, okay, if I saw her when I was 8, I might be obsessed with her the way that kids were obsessed with Boba Fett. So I came to a realization.
Right.
Becoming
Before
more
we move on to the plot, though, the clones.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What? A different Jedi, like before, secretly made a clone army, like, just in case. And
the Jedis are not great. Like, if you think about it very carefully, or not very carefully, if you think about it a little tiny bit, it's like, wow, the Jedis kind of suck. And part of their way of sucking was that they were like, time to make a secret army of clones. Because they're not an army, right? They're like 20 people out there who are force sensitive. And they're like, they got to spend a lot of their time doing like monastic shit, right? So they were like, well, let's just make an army and control it. That can't go wrong.
And so the Galactic Senate, which is turning evil and will eventually become the Empire, is using the clones to be more evil?
So there's the Republic. The Republic is losing members because they're bad at their jobs.
Yeah.
Because it's a declining empire, right? Even though it's called a republic and has a Senate, etc. And because the Sith are manipulating people, okay? Mm-hmm. One of these stupid things from the prequels is that apparently there are only two Sith. Like, that's dumb.
That's not a whole thing. Okay.
No, they say in the Phantom Menace, there's always just one, the Master and the Apprentice, or two, Master and Apprentice. And it's like, that is not a feasible system.
It's not a sustainable system. I don't understand what you guys are doing.
Right. So then the Republic is like, well, we better make an army of droids. Or maybe, I can't remember. I don't know. It's not important. There's an army of droids. There's an army of clones. At some point, they smash into each other.
Uh-huh.
Nerds on Twitter.
On the one hand, my headphones cut out, so I didn't hear on any of that. On the other hand, does it matter?
Yeah,
I don't know. I feel like I want to understand this all so that I could be fully justified in saying it's stupid.
Look, I know,
but we don't have time. I don't want to talk about this movie for too long.
There's no. Yeah, I'm so fucking like. It's like, I don't even, at this point, is Skywalker a surname or is it a job? Like, I don't even know, like,
he's the guy we get to walk on the sky.
Right, like, I don't even know.
It is a surname.
Thank you.
There's a word for that. It's like, if you're a dentist named Toothman, it's called an aptonym.
Oh, mm-hmm. Fun.
By the way, yeah, these just stopped working. Are you getting a feedback or an echo, or can we proceed?
We can go on. I'm not hearing any disturbance.
Any disturbance in the
force?
So I kind of understand the clones. Then I didn't hear what you were saying, but you cut out at about the time I decided to stop caring. But here's a question. You're telling me that there's no army, that they're like, oh, we never had an army. This is a thing. This is a government that controls a galaxy. And they never were like, we should have some kind of, you know, force. We should have some kind of soldiers just in case. Never got around to that.
I think it's comparable to, like, the UN, okay? Mm. And, like, the UN does have some form of forces, I think, but, like, they are minimal in number, comparable to the Jedi.
And the Jedi are cops now.
They call themselves a peacekeeping force, because that's not a loaded term.
Right. Yep.
They're like knights. They're Jedi knights, right? They protect the kingdom ceremonially.
All right.
I need milk. I need turkey bacon.
let's do the factsy segment.
Oh God, we haven't even gotten there.
I know.
Not even there yet. Attack of the Clones, released May 17th, 2002, the 14th number one movie of that year, made $80 million in its opening weekend. In second was the third week of Spider-Man. At $45 million. And the important thing here is Spider-Man opened higher. Spider-Man opened 3 weeks prior to $114 million. That was the first $100 million weekend in box office history. So, you know, obviously this is well before the MCU and Star Wars would be back, but, you know, you could certainly write your thesis on the shift from the domination of superhero and Marvel properties over Star Wars in the fact that Episode 2 could not keep pace with the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man. The only other new release was About a Boy. It opened in fourth, $8.5 million. Attack of the Clones won its second weekend, $47.8 million. Spider-Man still in second. 3, 4, 5 were all new. Insomnia, Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron. That got a sequel like last year. That's like the forgotten early DreamWorks movie. And Jennifer Lopez in Enough went 3, 4, 5 that second weekend. Only a 2 week number one movie in America, fell to second place in its third weekend behind our old friend Some of All Fears. Some of All Fears knocked this out of the top spot by a final score. $31.1 million for Some of All Fears, $21 million for Attack of the Clones, which stayed in the top 10 for 7 weeks. Earned $302.1 million, the third highest grossing film of 2002, behind Spider-Man and Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. That makes it the first Star Wars film to not be the number one movie of the year at the box office. And the only one of the prequels, Phantom Menace and Episode 3, were both the number one movies of their years. The only other Skywalker saga film, that is Episodes 1 through 9, yeah. The only other one that is not number one movie of the year was Episode 9, Rise of Skywalker, was not. It was third behind Avengers Endgame and that dumb Lion King reboot. It's kind of useless to compare all the Star Wars films against one another. The original trilogy has been re-released many, many times. It had lots of opportunities to make more money. The new trilogy, dollars are worth a lot more now. So you kind of can't. You have to just compare each trilogy to itself. So, this is the least successful of the prequel trilogy. Phantom Menace made $431 million in 1999. Revenge of the Sith made $380 million in 2005. Attack of the Clones did have a bigger opening weekend than Phantom Menace. Phantom Menace opened to $64.8 million. But Phantom Menace was a four-week number one movie in America and stayed in the top 10 for 11 weeks. Hey, let's take a minute at the all-time inflation-adjusted charts. This is the chart that attempts to actually determine how many tickets were sold to every movie that's ever come out and see what is the most successful without, you know, the value of the dollar getting in the way. Star Wars A New Hope, Episode 4, the original, is number 2 all-time. Mm-hmm. Force Awakens is number 11. Empire Strikes Back is number 13. Return of the Jedi, 17. Phantom Menace, 19. The Last Jedi, 44. Rogue One popping up at 62. Revenge of the Sith, 70. Rise of Skywalker, 88. Attack of the Clones, 100. This is the 100th most successful movie of all time. Solo not appearing on the chart. Expensive baubles.
Expensive baubles.
Somehow, this is an Oscar nominee. Robin?
Visual effects?
Visual effects!
Which
did you see?
Yeah, they're kind of like notably bad. And I feel like they were at the time as well.
Yeah, because I feel like
Paula Abdul and MC Scat Cat.
Right, yeah. Good. I thought I recalled hearing like a lot of the friends that went to see it. I thought I recalled them saying how bad the visual effects were in the movie. Like, ever at one point, like, just the him floating the pear back to Natalie, and like she goes to take a bite, and I'm like, this is terrible. Like, she's not even, that's just, she's like 2 inches away from it when she bites it.
Yeah, put a fish hook in an actual pear and take it over.
Right. Like, what are y'all doing?
I remember hearing when they were working on Force Awakens and they were building things because, you know, they figured out, oh, if you actually want things to look good, then you kind of build some practical stuff and CGI gloss on top of it.
Right.
That George Lucas showed up at the set and was baffled. Like, George Lucas was walking around asking people, why are you, like, you can do all of this with the computer. Why are you building all these things? He's an idiot, and he always has been. I forget that, what's the conspiracy theory that his wife at the time was really running the show on Star Wars?
Oh, I don't know.
I've never heard that.
But I would love to hear more about it.
Yeah.
Look into it. Like, there are people who say he wasn't really at the helm on Star Wars, and literally he didn't direct Empire or Return of the Jedi,
right?
Or write them.
Like, he doesn't know anything. Anyway, nominated for Best Visual Effects in A Crime Against Humanity. It lost to Robin.
I guess Spider-Man.
Spider-Man was the other losing nominee. The winner was Lord of the Rings. Which did, I mean, those look a little soupy themselves when you look back, but they look a world ahead of the Star Wars prequel.
Right. I'll also say that I watched this on Disney Plus. I own the Blu-ray of this. Disney Plus is supposed to be streaming this in 4K. The 4K remaster of this is bad. It's just actively bad. Like, everything is flat.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, they're supposed to be streaming in 4K. Nothing really streams in 4K. But I'm willing to believe.
I was just like,
time.
This too lazy, like a tiny bit too lazy to get up and put my my Blu-ray disc in. Like, around 20 minutes in, I was like, should I switch? This looks terrible. And I was like, it looking crisper is not going to turn it into a good movie.
And not to get stuck on Lucas again, but all the time for decades, he went back to the original trilogy to tweak this and that and make these little changes. He's always changing. Famously, when the original trilogy showed up on Disney Plus, they were a new version that no one had ever seen before because he was messing with them not telling anybody. He spends all that time and he won't. How about you fuck with these movies? How about you mess with these shitty movies, buddy? How about you make Jar Jar not look like Roger Rabbit? Like, if you want to mess around with something, we got three whole movies that can use it.
That's an insult to Roger Rabbit.
It is.
That Baby scene where he hits the lamp and it swings around and the shadow moves over him is better than anything you see in Jar Jar.
Very convincing. Won 2 Razzie Awards, worst screenplay and worst supporting actor for Hayden Christensen. I know
Agreed.
The Razzies are bad and we shouldn't pay them attention to them. However, worst screenplay for this movie? Sure, fine.
Also, the Hayden Christensen, he's so blah.
Yeah.
He has been good in things.
What?
There is a movie called Shattered Glass, which is about one of the early big plagiarism scandals, and it is excellent, and he is excellent in it.
All right. Is it just a drama? Just a straight-up drama?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe that's where he lives. Maybe action and crime movies are the only things I've seen him in are not his forte.
Okay. Shattered Glass is like, that'll make you reconsider Hayden Christensen. Also, Peter Sarsgaard, very good in it, too.
Ah.
The best thing I would say about him is that he is dopey and annoying and kind of dumb and just a tool. But he would be, though. Like, it doesn't not work for the character.
Right.
So I'm clear. This is Darth Vader, yes?
Correct.
Okay. Yes. All right.
There is one moment I love in this movie. There's a few scenes that I like. The one moment I love is when he's like, I fucking killed everybody. And then the Darth Vader theme plays for the first time. I'm like, yes.
Well, you know what? I mean, I feel like the dark side for him was a glow up. Because, I mean, you go from that to James Earl Jones, like, your whole everything just drops like a thousand.
some very serious bad stuff happens to him in between. He basically gets turned into a torso with a head attached. And
do we see that on screen? Like, does that happen on screen?
Interesting. Yeah, he like.
Oh yeah, no, it's. People will do, like, people have done, like, a Yule log for the TV of him on his torso on fire.
Aww, yeah. That's not fair.
To make ourselves feel better, here's two Samuel L. Jackson facts. Camila, I hate to correct you. According to Samuel L. Jackson, his lightsaber, much like his wallet in Pulp Fiction, was engraved with the words bad motherfucker.
Shut the fuck
up. He made them engrave bad motherfucker on the hilt of his lightsaber before he would go on.
That's right, Sam. All right. Well played, sir. Well played.
Didn't he also demand a purple lightsaber?
Additionally, according to IMDb trivia, because he wanted to be able to identify himself during the Coliseum scene, Samuel L. Jackson specifically asked George Lucas if he could have a purple lightsaber. Lucas replied the Jedi lightsabers were only blue or green, to which Jackson said, "Yeah, but I want a purple one."
And good for him.
Yeah, he's got the only purple one.
Wow.
Okay, so how do we feel, everybody?
I feel like we should stop talking about this stupid movie.
I think we've gotten everything out.
Oh,
except for there was something about a moisture farm. What the fuck is a moisture farm?
Listen, if you live on a desert planet, okay, and you still need water to
got
live
it. Okay, all right.
Yeah. I wanted to say shout out to Body Peace, former cult member. Body from the Nexium documentary.
Yes, yes.
I forgot she was in this, and when I saw her, I like jumped off the couch like, Body! Body was the first one out.
Yeah.
While we're doing that, hi, hello to Joel Edgerton in here for a minute as his uncle, what's his name?
Oh, I missed him.
Owen Lars, and Owen then Lars Bonnie flipped. Is Aunt Beru.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought she looked
and
familiar.
I'm pretty sure that body double for Padme that got killed was Rose Byrne.
No, Rose Byrne is her, it's not her
wet nurse or something? Not, or
her, it's the person who like hangs out with her after.
Her chambermaid?
Yeah. You might be conflating this with Keira Knightley is her body double in Phantom Menace.
Ooh, that makes more sense. Here are like a couple more complaints and then some things I legitimately like because my score isn't going to be that bad. But before we get to that, this I have to rescue my mother subplot. Okay. You haven't given a shit about your mother for 10 years. You have been off doing Jedi things. At no point in there did you write a letter. Did you pop in? You're flying all over at any point. And you waited until, let's see, one day after it was too late. You just waited until literally the moment that she was dying to show up. And then you're upset about it? Like
really upset
you
about
had
it.
Time.
Yeah. You brought this on. The only person you can be mad at, sir, is yourself. Because mm-hmm. They had their version of Skype back then. Like they could or there. He could have popped in, called.
We see it multiple times.
Right. It's not impossible for the communication is not impossible in these planets.
On the plus side, I like that he remembered that he does better when he rips off better movies. So they literally make a reference to Spice Miners.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole car sequence, which is the best thing, they're like, can we do this in Blade Runner? Let's just put this in Blade Runner Town.
And I famously don't like Blade Runner, but I think that they made a strong choice there because the coolest thing about Blade Runner is the way that the city looks. So good job.
Yeah, I like that they went, okay, R2-D2 can fly. Just this once, never again. That was fun.
That whole sequence, sometimes in movies like this, I'm like, oh, that's a really hard level of the video game. I think I've made that joke before on the podcast. That is the originator of that joke.
Oh.
I really like when Obi-Wan says to Anakin, why do I get the feeling that you'll be the death of me? Because we know.
Womp, womp, womp.
But then I got at this whole sidetrack of like, did Darth Vader really kill Obi-Wan or did Obi-Wan just choose that moment to become one with the Force? Because as you'll recall, he disappears before the lightsaber can cut him in half.
Yeah.
And I know extra textually that's because they thought it would be too upsetting to watch this guy die, but.
Really? They thought that far ahead in 78 or whatever?
Well, yeah, I mean, the first time you see somebody like cut by a lightsaber is when Luke gets his hand cut off in Empire.
Mm. Hmm. I mean, it circles back, right? When in yes. Last Jedi, when Luke becomes one with the Force at a moment that served as a distraction that let the hero. I mean, that's a direct echo of that. Last Jedi was a good movie. Shut up, nerds.
My friend K-Dax, who's a big Star Wars nerd, said that the whole becoming one with the Force thing is explored in depth in the expanded universe.
Mm.
I'll never know.
And you don't know.
So, look, this is bad. My opinion of it is elevated a little bit because I hated Phantom Menace so much. And I legitimately think it's better than The Phantom Menace. It has more sequences that are fun. It has more Ewan McGregor doing a good job. I think he does a pretty good Obi-Wan. We traded Jar Jar for C-3PO, which is, you know, he still has dumb shit to say, but it's an upward move. And Natalie Portman looks great. Hanging out. Cool. Yeah. It's a better movie, so my score isn't going to be that low. Anybody else? Things you liked, didn't like before we shrug and stop?
I liked when the end credits rolled. Mm-hmm. Is this the first? Was Natalie in the first one?
She was.
Okay. Is she in the third one?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Good for her. Good for her getting that Star Wars money.
And this was like her transition into being an adult actor.
Was it?
Yeah.
Basically, Anakin Skywalker is an incel. He never had sex. He was hung up on the girl who hung around for 4 days when he was a kid. He got laid once. It led to tragedy. And then he tried to destroy the universe. You know what? Makes sense, actually. This is what
might have worked out. Like. It would have worked out better if the Jedi let people have emotional connections, which is also, by the way, probably why Anakin didn't talk to his mom for 10 years. I agree. It's still stupid. I don't want to defend this movie anymore.
So it's not even just, it wasn't even just romantic. It was just emotional in general. Just,
yeah, pretty much.
Mm, that's a bad rule.
This world sucks.
The Jedi kind of suck.
Man, this is just making me like the movie The Last Jedi more. Because that's why Yoda's like, fuck the Jedi. It was a bad idea.
Right. I guess that's what made nerds so upset.
Yeah. Yeah.
That Yoda turned.
Listen, hey, one day we're going to land on Empire or Force Awakens and Star Wars fans, you'll feel better about yourself.
Right.
Today we landed on Attack of the Clones. The trailer, by the way.
I will not let this republic be split in two. My negotiations will not fail.
If they do, there aren't enough Jedi to protect the Republic. We're keepers of the peace, not soldiers.
You know I don't like it when you do that.
Sorry, Master. I forgot you don't like flying. Well, you've lost him.
If you'll excuse me.
I hate it when he does that.
You don't need guidance, Anakin. I see you becoming the greatest of all Jedi.
The boy has exceptional skills.
His abilities have made him arrogant.
Excuse me. I'm in charge of security here, m'lady.
They are using a bounty hunter named Jango Fett to create a clone army.
Wait.
Blast, this is why I hate flying.
This is a crisis. The Senate must vote the Chancellor emergency powers.
The dark side clouds everything. In grave danger, you are. Begun this Clone War has.
What are your thoughts on the trailer?
It was boring.
I think it's clearly better than the movie because the whole thing with the prequels is that there's a good parts version and the trailer is a good parts version.
I thought it was boring. And again, like for me being outside of the universe so much, I can see where when Yoda pulls out his saber or his lightsaber and starts to fight, like that's like the oh shit moment in a trailer that people are looking for. It didn't do anything for me because I have no connection, but I get, you know, way to go on that aspect of it. But it would not have made it did not make me go see the movie.
It's 2 minutes of mostly interesting things instead of 2.5 hours of sometimes interesting things, so it's better. Letterboxd lists this week include the title is a spoiler. Others, you know, Snakes on a Plane, We Bought a Zoo, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. Those are better examples than Attack of the Clones. But yeah. I guess if you went in wondering whether or not the clones would attack, what else? The score was better than the film. True.
Accurate statement.
And finally, this movie had no business being this long. That's true.
Absolutely.
And a good, useful list. If a movie you're thinking about watching is on that list, just don't. Just don't do it.
That is a useful list.
This was, Attack of the Clones was the longest Star Wars movie up to this point. Huh. Think about that. It had nothing to do. And they took more time to do that nothing than any ridiculous. Of the other movies took to do things.
And that's the other thing. Like, I've always, I guess that's something that I've always noted when I have watched a Star Wars movie. It's like, oh, we got out of here under 2 hours, you know, under 2 hours. And it feels like we should, like, if any movies are going to be over 2 hours long, like, you would think all of the Star Wars movies would be on that list. But
sure. Nope. This was one of those cases where I wrote down, like, how is there an hour left in the movie? Like, yeah. I paused it at like 1:20 and I'm like, what's going to happen?
You dirty liar. Stop telling me there's going to be another hour left.
Anyway, let's rate it. I'm going to try to climb the ladder. Yeah. Camila?
22.
That's fine. You know, you've given lower scores.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to have the second highest. At 40. Oh, it's wow. Not a good movie, but there are much worse movies. Robin?
I'm going to be much more generous and give it a 60.
Wow.
Yeah, like, at the end of the day, there's at least an hour's worth of yay in this. Pew, pew, pew.
Actually, that pew, 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 that was going to be my recap. Zoom, zoom, pew, 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 lightsabers, Yoda.
Right, and I also think it's kind of entertainingly bad in the bad parts, so like, I'm pretty sanguine on this movie.
Okay. Yeah, that makes... And in your defense, this movie was fairly well reviewed. It's had like a 65% on Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, in the moment, people didn't hate it. Roger Ebert loved The Phantom Menace, but I think he just really wanted to. Okay.
I also think that if you saw that in the right like, I know a lot of people who saw it, like, I'm sure Roger Ebert saw some kind of advanced screening, but, like, people who saw it in a room of Star Wars dorks when it first came out, like, the energy in that room made you like it more.
Camila's like, no.
I would still like to say hard pass.
40 and 2/3 was the overall score. It seems fine. And we didn't even talk about Christopher Lee. That was the actual, like...
Yeah!
Being sinister, it's great.
How can I not give a decent number of points to a movie where Christopher Lee fights Yoda?
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
Apparently, they did the thing where they had like a little tennis ball or something for him to look at when he was fighting Yoda. But one day they just put vampire fangs on it to make him feel more at home.
I love that Christopher Lee had like a weird 80s blockbuster resurgence.
Mm-hmm.
What a cool career arc.
And put out metal albums, and they're good. Like,
what?
Not
I didn't know that.
Not like half-assed, like black, like grindy black metal albums, very late in his life. I want to say in the 90s and 2000s.
Damn, son.
Yeah.
He was like, all right, I'm on my way out. I'm about to do it all.
Two, the bingo card. Oh. I think we have to cross off no cell service. Because,
wait
like,
a why?
Where?
Because a big part of it hinged on Ewan McGregor was trying to contact Anakin and couldn't because he wasn't getting a signal on the clone factory.
Sure. I will accept that.
Yeah.
Anybody's gun jam?
No.
Is there any glowing green liquid? At the bar?
Feels aside, like custom. Disney Plus has the little Cadane's tobacco use. I was looking for it. Do they mean when the guy tries to sell him death sticks?
I
because
think
to
so.
Me, that always meant like meth.
Straight up meth. Nope, just good old fashioned cigarettes.
Yeah, at least five. Like, I know that some people think it's dumb. At least 5 points of my score are for a Jedi mind trick to make someone stop dealing drugs.
I want to do something better with my life.
Anything else on the bingo card? No, I don't directly recall any glowing green liquid.
Mm-mm.
Nope. Damn, yeah. This was a hard one. I guess it was the spooky season that really got us out of slowed us down.
So it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. I want to start with Camila because I feel like most of the last 30 minutes was me and Robin going, a Star Wars point, and Camila going, I don't care.
Accurate.
Right. Give me a look. What have you been watching?
Well, you know, as it was, we are ending spooky season, so I was watching a lot of horror films. But I did watch the new Paranormal Activity, Next of Kin, which I would suggest. Like, I mean, again, like these Paranormal Activity movies, you know, you get what you get. Like, you know what's going to happen. You know what they are. But this one was still fun and fun. It feels like a really wrong thing to say about this because people die. But but I would think, say, if you like these movies, you'll enjoy this one. They do some cool stuff, technology, like with camera work, like some super slow mo that goes on where they're catch the monster in the action of the super slow mo. And I just thought, like, that was totally worth me watching, like 90 minutes of me, that split second moment, totally worth it. I'm here for it. So, yeah, there's that. And I think that's the only new movie that I have completely watched. I started watching The Harder They Fall last night, and I started to fall asleep, so I turned it off, but I am in love with every GD frame of the first 45 minutes I have watched of this movie.
Like, yes, yes, that movie was so cool. Help me workshop a joke here. What is better, Quentin Tarantino Foe or Robert Rodriguez?
Quentin Tarantino
Second
Foe.
One. Second one.
Really? Okay.
Oh, you're going to have to get split. More help on this.
Yeah.
I do feel kind of guilty about that joke because, like, those two directors both have taken so much from black cinema of the 70s. So, like, it is obviously going back to that.
Right.
But nevertheless, shit, every bit of it works.
Yeah, like, I am very interested to see, like, what else James, is it James Samuel? Is this the director?
That
no, the Bullets. Right. The Bullets is the director, whoever the fuck that is.
Like, what?
Somebody named
There's
the
definitely Bullets. A guy named James, and it's spelled like
he does the music. He's the composer. He's the musical composer. So the director is the Bullets, who I will be looking out for his friggin', like, whatever his career path goes, because I'm here for it.
James Samuel and the Bullets are the same person.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
Well, here's a relevant connection. Eternals, everybody calm down. Like, this is another one of those times where it's like, yeah, it's not the best Marvel movie. There are better Marvel movies. It's also not the worst Marvel movie. I'm sorry that you expect every Marvel movie to be a life-changing experience. They've made 25 of them. Right. A few of them are going to be just pretty good. Yeah. And it's just pretty good.
I feel like I've personally hit the wall where MCU is concerned. Like, usually there's this feeling of, wow, when a new Marvel movie is released. And this one, like, I saw the trailer and I'm like, I mean, I'll watch it at some point, sure.
The thing is, they gave us such beautiful closure.
Right.
With Endgame. Yeah. And then they were like, never mind, we need more money. And I'm like, I kind of had my closure.
Right. I don't want to come back to the, like, we've broken up. We've moved on. Like, we're fine. Like, we're totally amicable. I bought a new place. It's fine.
Right. Play Cool by Gwen Stefani.
I mean, you could convince me. I'm looking forward to the Spider-Man. I know that they're going weird with the next Doctor Strange. You know, you could get me back in. And I've seen all of these and like them. Shang-Chi especially. But, like, if they are failing, it is only because now they've created an army that expects it all to be amazing every time. Like, that's their only problem.
Right.
You know, I think it's worth seeing, unless you don't want to, in which case, don't bother.
Right.
That's
right.
Kind of how most movies go.
Exactly.
I liked Last Night in Soho a lot. You know, it doesn't have the best plot ever. It's a little obvious, but the visuals are great. The style is great. You know, it's a Edgar Wright movie. It looks and sounds good. And only my third 10 out of 10 among 2021 releases is for Spencer, the Princess Diana movie with Kristen Stewart.
Really?
It is so much darker and more, like, intimate and personal than I was anticipating.
Really?
Not a biopic at all. It's just about 3 days where not a lot happens. 3 days where she has to go to Christmas with the royals and is pissed about it.
Ooh, I love a movie about how horrible Christmas is.
My Letterboxd review is like, much like The Shining, this is a movie about going away for the winter with the family and absolutely losing your mind as a result. It's great. Kristen Stewart is really good. Her best performance, and surprisingly, just a really engaging and a movie that stuck with me a lot. So I know not everyone did, because the box office has indicated that teenagers are going to the movies and grown-ups are not. But whenever you get a chance to see Spencer, go do that.
Why is it called Spencer?
That's her last name.
Oh.
That's her maiden name. Mm-hmm.
Got it.
This is old news at this point because we haven't recorded in a while, but Dune, I liked Dune.
Mm-hmm.
What? Never thought I'd like Dune. I sure did. Saw it twice in the theater both times.
What?
Wow.
Yeah, my friends rented a theater. I wouldn't have gone back in a COVID pool to do it a second time with it on HBO Max. But yeah.
It's a lot of cool space stuff.
Yep.
And great actors. Yeah, it's cool space stuff, great actors, another awesome score. Yeah, I like it quite a lot, and it is better. I finally went back. Robin, in fact, stopped me because I was like, well, I should watch the David Lynch version first, and Robin made me promise I wouldn't because it would affect it too much. So I reversed that. I watched the new one and then finally watched David Lynch's Dune. And you know, no one is more convinced that David Lynch is perfect than me, but no, this version's better.
And the cool thing is that for Dune Part 2, should that actually for real happen, I remain somewhat skeptical, you do kind of get to compare it to David Lynch because the story goes further.
I get to compare it to the last 20 minutes of David Lynch's
right.
movie.
It is very, I forgot, I did also watch the David Lynch movie again in between my viewings of current Dune. I forgot about how there's that, like, I love Virginia Madsen's role in that movie where she's just like, and here's what's going on elsewhere. And when she's like, meanwhile, they fell in love.
If you listen to David Lynch, the problem is he wasn't allowed to make a David Lynch movie. You know, they made a big blockbuster studio movie. I'm sure that is some of it, if not all of the problem. But that just, for me, that just makes it extra delightful when a David Lynch thing happens. Like, we're going to talk to a 400-pound slug in a vat for 10 minutes.
And that's
yay!
Like the first scene of the movie.
Oh, it's so great.
A level 3 guild navigator.
It's this nerd stuff that's making Camila consider how long she wants to hang around.
I just have a quick question about Dune, other than, you know, I mean, the whole thing with Oscar Isaac, I will watch it at some point. But what is the whole, what's all the jokes going around about spices and Dune? Like, I don't.
Okay, so the whole premise of the universe in Dune is that there is one planet that has a resource called spice, which allows for interstellar travel. It also gets you high.
Got it.
And helps you live longer.
Oh, wow. This is a multifunctional.
Correct.
Covers a lot of ground.
Right? It's like, imagine if the world ran on cocaine. So the Galactic Empire is moving chess pieces around to the control of the planet that has the spice. Meanwhile, you are rooting for one family of colonizers as they infiltrate the native people who know how to mine the spice in a more effective way.
Got it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm. And there's sandworms.
Dune yes. for dummies.
Great. Let's draw a movie. Wait, let's not. It's a special occasion, everybody.
Yeah!
What?
We did That's it. We made right. it to 100 episodes, friends.
Yay!
Ooh.
So, if you will recall, a few weeks ago, I won my third bingo of the calendar year, and Sean and Camila gave me the revenge present of Decide the Gimmick for our 100th episode. And I didn't think too hard about it. I just said, you know what? Tony Goldwyn is our patron saint. For newer listeners, it's because he was in the first three movies that we drew. So, clearly, he is the guiding hand behind us. So, let's watch his highest grossing movie, Ghost.
Yay!
But
get
wait,
your spinning wheels ready and prepare to have Henry VIII I am in your head. No, it's a good movie. I watched this movie unusually early just because it was a VHS in my house. So I'm pretty sure I was watching Ghost at like 9 or 10, being like, this is an important film.
Yeah.
And my parents are kind of just like, no, I think we just got that somehow. But hey, go ahead, watch Ghost repeatedly, child. So I'm eager to revisit it.
Listen, it won expensive baubles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it won a screenplay Oscar.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yes.
And it's on Netflix okay. and Paramount Plus. So,
additionally, I have decided to gift us all with a 100th episode present, which is a preemptive veto.
Oh.
Everyone gets to strike a movie from the list.
Oh.
Oh.
I'm loving that.
Wow, that's going to require some thought.
Yeah, that's going to, excuse me, I'd get my charts and my printouts ready. Well,
so
thank you.
Next week, we will talk about Ghost and reveal what movies we are making no longer a number one movie in America.
Yes.
That's right.
Can I say anything with the word Transformer in it is now... anything involving the word Transformer Hobbit is no longer on...
Transformer Hobbit.
One movie. Just one movie.
Oof. Pressure's on. Okay. And feel free to weigh in. Feel free to let us know what you don't want to hear us talk about. Well, before we get to the 100th episode, and what an achievement it is. Not really. There was a pandemic. We didn't have shit to do for like a whole year. So, yeah. No. Great. Happy to have made it here. Here's to at least 100 more.
Yay.
I mean, hey, here's to 1,200 more. They keep making new number one movies in America, everybody.
We have to conquer death to get to the end of the list.
Attack of the Clones was released whenever the hell it was released. I don't feel like looking it up again because fuck this movie. What was the number one song? It was March of
2002.
May of 2002. What was the number one song in America?
Eminem.
No.
Ja Rule.
You've entered the household, but you're in the wrong room.
Nelly.
No.
Nora Jones?
That's not in Ja Rule's household.
I don't even
he
know.
Wishes.
I know, right? I blanked on who Ja Rule was for a second.
He's that guy who has really
hey,
voice.
Give it a good one.
Yeah.
Ashanti?
Correct.
Ooh.
Oh.
Foolish? Is that her?
That's the one.
That's been an answer before, hasn't it?
I think so.
Because Sum of All Fears.
Oh!
There it is.
This time I listened to it and I kind of went, when does the song start? This is kind
me
of
too. That's all... a great song.
I never really got
There's
into
some
it.
Some of them R&B hits where I'm like, is any of this the chorus or is it just kind of a groove? Like...
Sometimes that's what it is, Sean. You just got to know about the groove. You got to feel the groove. Let it wash over you.